It's episode 41 of Aaron and Patricia. My name is Aaron.
My name is Patricia.
Hey, babe. And so, apologies, everybody, if I sound a bit different. It's because recently my headphones recently broke, so I've just got another bunch of order. So I've had to revert back to the old headset, which I think everyone remembers from the YouTube days. So, yeah. But anyway, while we get into the show, we're going to be talking about the COVID vaccine, so-called allergic reaction, which turned out not to be, and we'll tell you a bit more about that. We're also going to tell you about how Trump said, Trump employee demanded that herd immunity strategy be implied. We're also going to talk about some Black Lives Matter stuff as well. Mitch McConnell's finally recognized President-elect Joe Biden, so you know about that. We're saying congratulations to a wife and husband for their new arrival. Tell you about that later on as well. Also, Saturday morning cartoons are coming back in 2021. We're going to tell you all about that too. Hilary Duff is not going to be coming back as Lizzie McGuire. What the heck happened there? Tell you about that too. Also, Comic San Diego, Pixminis, Hey Arnold, the Jungle Movie, Aftermath, a post-review of a particular Roald Dahl movie, and also Patricia playing Earthbound. You are listening to Aaron and Patricia on the 20th of December of 2020. So, Patricia, do you want to tell everybody what's going on the Old School Lane podcast?
Yeah, so as you guys know, we had just recently posted up the newest episode of the Roald Dahl retrospective on Roald Dahl's The Witches, but we'll get to that in just a moment. And also, we are still going along with Pixminis. We just posted up episode 19 as of the recording of this podcast, and episode 20 will be posting up tonight. And also, we will be doing some additional episodes of casual chats discussing about some other movies that I needed to catch up with, such as the Candace Against the Universe, which, according to my viewers, that's what they wanted me to see as like an offset to the animated movies that I felt that were disappointing in 2020. We'll see how that turns out. I'm getting to that hopefully by either this week or next week, depending on the holidays. And also, I've been editing my portion of the video for the Hey Arnold, the Jungle Movie Aftermath. But again, we'll talk about that a little later on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's start off with our first topic, which is there's this story going around about this Tennessee nurse who got the coronavirus vaccine and then fainted right afterwards. And so the internet obviously freaked out because basically that's what the internet seems to do very well. But people really need to know about the ins and outs about this. So apparently, according to this nurse who got this the Pfizer vaccine, apparently she didn't faint because of the vaccine itself. Apparently because she was in pain for a while after actually, you know, getting the injection into her arm. So she obviously passed out because of that, and it's an issue that she's had pretty much her life from what I know. So basically, this is another false story that keeps going on by these anti-vaxxer types that keep reacting every time that, you know, someone either, you know, faints or does something weird that is not related to the coronavirus and tries to present it as such.
Yeah, it's very similar to a story that happened about a few weeks before this incident, in which a woman who had gotten the coronavirus vaccine, and then there was like a awful looking picture of her foot that was like, looked like it was like really hardened and crusted, and it almost looked like it was about to fall off. But it turned out that that was not caused by the coronavirus vaccine, but people are still saying, oh no, I'm definitely not going to get the vaccine because of this. I mean, I think I even saw some post saying, the flu shot has a 40% chance of protecting you from the from the virus. And then now they're saying, oh, this coronavirus vaccine has a 90% chance of protecting you from the virus. Well, I'm not going to do that because my natural body protects me 99.9%. So what's the point?
Oh, for God's sakes. And you know what? I feel bad for that lady as well, because, like, you know, now the foot's going around the internet and people are, like, saying, you know, are either, you know, making fake propaganda of it or unfortunately being turned on by it. You know, like, it's a really awful place to be, I think, if you're in the verge of misinformation or fetishes, you know. So, like, I think that's a pretty terrible place to be on the internet, as far as I feel really bad for that lady. I really do. So, because, yeah. You know, I just think it's disgraceful that people just can, like, jump on these things and, you know, create propaganda out of it, and they know that they're lying about this. They know that it's not true. You know, but they're doing it anyway because, you know, we're like, you know, Instagram influencers are going to, like, you know, fling, you know, homeopathy shit. And, like, people just kind of, like, just want to, you know, mold it all to their, you know, political point of view. It's like, it's just, it's so dishonest and dangerous as well because we know how devastating this coronavirus pandemic has been across the entire planet. And now that we've got a way out of this crazy year that we've had and, you know, going into the next year as well, the fact that we now have a solution to the problem and people are now trying to, you know, sabotage that in a way, like, it's just, it's I just don't understand these people. I really don't. And as well, like, you know, we talk as, like, two autistic people as well, like, and guess what gets brought up every time the vaccines get talked about, you know, like, you know, how damaged and how awful we are. You know, like, it's, you know, it's such bullshit. If you really want to, you know, find out about, you know, what happens with autistic people, we can guarantee you this: it's not fucking vaccines, okay? And, you know, we're both living proof of that. You know,
yeah, we are.
So, yeah, but I thought we'd just share that with people and get that old chestnut out of the way, really, because you know, it's something that makes the rounds the entire time, and we can definitely tell you that for once again, you know, vaccines do not do, you know, awful things that the internet thinks that they want you to want, that the internet wants you to think that they do. They just don't.
Right.
Okay. Right. Anyway, going back to the coronavirus story, you know, more stuff comes out of the White House, the more that we found out that Trump's leaving. And so this one is definitely a doozy and definitely kind of like shows how America has basically become like the number one infected country in the world. But a Trump appointee at one point suggested to Donald Trump that they tried the herd immunity strategy and have everyone infected with the virus.
You know how dangerous this would have been if that actually were to be, if were to pass. I mean, if Trump would have been elected for a second term and, you know, he was promising to people, fire Fauci, fire Fauci. And then if this would have happened, oh, man, there would be even twice or even three times more deaths than there are already now.
It's like, gee, like, you know, apparently people who, you know, want to see the back of this coronavirus believe in science and, you know, basically have common sense didn't appear to, you know, take advantage of what Donald Trump was offering them. You know, go figure, you know, like so. Infants, kids, teens, young people, young adults, middle-aged, too, with no conditions, have zero or little risk, so we add them to develop herd, and we want them herd infected. That's what Alexander said, and I believe Alexander is, Paul Alexander wrote on July 4th to his boss, who is Health and Human Services Assistant Secretary for Public, for Public Affairs, Michael Caputo. And six other senior officials as well. So, you know, this is the kind of, like, dog shit thinking that was basically going around the White House. You know, and...
Oh, man. And here's the thing. Like, maybe you're right. Maybe that those young kids and those young adults don't have a chance. But you have to realize that they live with parents or they live with relatives or they're surrounded by people who do have those effects. Like, what if they were to meet up with their friends, or what if they were to go back to school? What if they were able to go out anywhere?
But here's the thing about this, like, this virus has proven to also kill healthy people. So, like, this thing is dangerous. Like, I think that needed to be hammered home, you know, pretty much. And so you can see the result of all this confusion that was created at the top level. Like, you know how many infections are we now for America? Like, at the moment, like, you know, but, you know, it's definitely in the high millions at the moment, and over 300,000 people dead because of this. Like, you know, just like the complete and utter negligence that has taken place at senior level in the United States of America should be criminal in that regard. And so, but unfortunately, it's probably not going to be, you know, like, pretty much like, you know, what George Bush did in, you know, illegally invading another country and killing hundreds of thousands of people. Here we got Donald Trump is probably, you know, his negligence has probably also resulted in the deaths of, you know, many people. And he's going to probably, you know, unless, you know, the New York Attorney's Office comes knocking, I don't think, you know, nothing's going to really happen to him in that regard. So it's like, it's you know, but like, it's amazing. I really hope that more stuff like this starts coming out and we start to see a full picture of what's happened, because who knows, maybe this might be another long-lasting lessons of why you just don't like people like Donald Trump in the White House or make him president.
Or, you know, we could possibly not even learn our lesson and we are doomed to repeat it, whatever comes first.
Well, yeah. Anyway, let's move on before I lose my little soul live, you know, in regards to that. But
sure.
So Black Lives Matter once again in headlines. So this goes back to 2015 when a Somali American teen was told by a U.S. police officer that we killed "quote unquote" you folk during Black Hawk Down. And so Black Hawk Down, for those of you know, is a military operation that took place in Somalia when the U.S. Occupied the country. But this has resulted in a long-standing investigation that has taken on. And so Sahan Journal actually put together a Twitter video that came out. And actually, if you look at that, I actually retweeted it. So if you go back onto at Arumeta Show, ArumetaShow, you can go actually watch the video that I've retweeted there. And it shows like the whole like a recording of like, you know what? You know what's so disturbing about you know, some of the stuff that we're finding on police body cameras? Like, you know, they're being recorded and like it's they're still very happy to, you know, describe how, you know, how racist they are in some cases. You know, some of the incidents that seem to come to light. You know, it's just it's like, you know, cameras aren't really doing all that much to dissuade you know, police officers to make, you know, racist judgments or make racist actions still. As if anything, it's just being recorded.
Yeah, and they'll be like, okay, well, we have the proof. We're just going to suspend them for a bit. I mean, if they get fired or if they get blacklisted, it's like, it's optional.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, as all that as well, like, there's been some other stuff that I've been posting up, too. There was the mother of a boy who was killed by a police officer. She herself led a protest and then herself ended up getting arrested. You know, like, and so you can probably imagine that scared the hell out of everybody there that was actually part of that protest. They thought, oh, wait, they're going to kill her, too? You know, like,
oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people wonder why, you know, why is Black Lives Matter still around? Why is it not going away? Because this is what happens. You know, like, the only reason this comes to the forefront is because people are just not wanting to, you know, deal with this properly. And so, like, this is not going to go away by any stretch of the imagination. So Black Lives Matter now is probably the single biggest global movement of calling for racial justice in probably since the Civil Rights Movement. You know, and dare I say, if it gets any bigger, it could even become bigger than that.
Well, I mean, it's already reached globally. I mean, countries around the world are protesting the same thing. So you know how big it's gotten.
Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, this case that we're talking about, this Somali teen, I mean, like, it's not going to be the first, and it definitely isn't the first, and it definitely isn't going to be the last, unfortunately.
Nope, so, unfortunately, which is absolutely awful.
Yeah. So, I mean, here's the thing about this, like, you hear about, like, what's going on in football stadiums right now here in the UK, that, you know, people actually booing, people taking the knee at the moment, like, which is nothing that we haven't seen before with Colin Kaepernick already. But, yep. I mean, it's, again, like, I mean, people who are, you know, triggered by it, you know, funnily enough, people who, like, you say, I don't like this because it's political and stuff like that. Like, you know, I'd urge you all to, like, have a really proper look at, like, you know, the racial injustices that actually take place in our societies and then kind of come away with, like, oh, hey, maybe this is a problem, you know?
Yeah, and people are arguing, saying, I don't want politics in my sports. I just want to enjoy the sports.
Yeah, but, you know, that in itself is political. So, which is the irony of it when you really think about it. So,
I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're good. Any BLM stuff, we'll keep continuing to look at it. People keep putting it in front of us, you know, like, it's this is something that's going to, I guarantee, like, I still get tweets by it, you know, from all sorts of people who are listening to our show.
Yeah, and I mean, very similar.
And this is a global show as well. Like, it's not just in America. This is all over the show.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And you remember that over the past few years when we were doing the Aaron Metta show and then we later rebranched into Aaron and Patricia, every single episode we started off with was talking about net neutrality. So it would affect everybody around the world. So this is, as long as Black Lives Matter is going to happen, we're going to be talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Just segueing back into American politics. Do you hear what Mitch McConnell recently said?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, and so he has finally recognized that Joe Biden is president-elect of the United States of America right now.
Right. Oh, yeah, he jumped ship on that really quickly.
Which, I mean, he's going to have to, because, like, this is the way it's going to be. And also, some of that as well, like, we don't even know what the special elections are going to say yet. Like, so.
Well, I mean, or he could be a denier or probably fight illegally to try to keep Trump in the office like those 126 Republicans try to do.
Well, it's done now. I think they can mess around for a couple of hours in Congress. But I think it's done now. I think Joe Biden is going to be sworn in on January 20th as the next president, as the 46th president of the United States of America. Whether the Trump support or whether the Republicans or whether the guy down the street likes it or not, you know, like the fat lady has sung, as far as I'm concerned.
you saw what Trump said this morning, right?
Who gives a shit? Like he lost the. I mean, here's the thing about this. You know, I was checking out Social Blade. Do you know how many Twitter followers Donald Trump is losing right now per day?
A few thousand.
11,000 a day.
Oof. Okay.
So he's done, man. Like, as far as I'm concerned, like, he's still going to be there, unfortunately, in our consciousness for whatever reason. I have no idea. But, you know, like, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I really don't care what he has to say anymore.
I mean, I don't either. But he was like claiming that, oh, on January 6th, we're going to fight until we get what we want. And he says he's planning something big.
Oh,
so
fuck you. Get out of the White House, you whiny bitch. I really do not care what he has to say anymore. I've put up with this bullshit for 4 fucking years, and now we finally got to the point where he's now been voted out, and the American people have had enough of this guy. Get the fuck out of here. Do your rallies, do whatever you want. Say you're going to run in 2024, as far as I'm concerned, with your enlarged prostate and coronavirus, that you got that, and who knows what the hell that's done to you, physically or mentally or whatever. You know, like, go have some fun for a good couple of years. Maybe you might drop dead in those couple of years and we don't have to think about you anymore. But if it comes to 2024, everybody remembers what a piece of shit you were in the last 4 years, and no doubt you'll be going up against Kamala Harris, who is a woman of color. You know, like, good luck to you, pal. Trump's done, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I really wish I could just erase him from my consciousness and then I don't have to think about him anymore. You know?
That's going to be hard, considering that half the country still wants him back in office.
Well, you know what, babe? Let's do it here, right now. I say we stop covering Donald Trump shit.
Okay.
I say we stop doing it. I tell you, I'll even anyone who listens to this show and wants to find me on Twitter and everything like that, I would say that if we really are done with Donald Trump in regards to this, and we believe he's out of the White House, and people are complaining that we're sick and tired of hearing about him, you know what? I actually want to hear from you. Let's take this step now and say, from this show forward, we stop talking about Donald Trump.
Okay, then. And so we are officially done, yeah.
Yeah, so as far as I'm concerned, Trump has lost the election and he's on his way out. And maybe I think it's about time we just kind of concentrate on what Joe Biden wants to do.
All right, then. So we will do that.
Okay. So Joe Biden, he's going to do nothing for 4 years. So I guess we'll see you in 2024. This has been the Aaron Metta Show. Thank you very much.
All right, see you later.
No. There's other stuff going on besides Biden. I promise everybody about that. But, yeah. So, Patricia, you gave a shout-out to somebody on the congratulations of a new arrival.
Yes, I did. So, for those who don't know, I interviewed Nikita Kalam a few months ago, alongside with my co-host Liam Higgins, who helped me get a hold of her. So, she was the voice of young Nala in the 1994 iteration of The Lion King, and she's been an acting teacher. She's been in various TV shows and movies. Just recently, she was in the Perry Mason reboot. And so just recently, she had given birth to a baby girl.
No, that's wonderful. So congratulations to her and congratulations to her husband. And yeah, I hope that they have a wonderful life together with their new little girl. So.
Yeah, and I'm really sad that interview didn't really catch on. I mean, it did for my anchor page, but my YouTube channel, it was like this and the Eric Roberts interview. It was like dead zone. Like almost nobody listened to it.
Doesn't that tell you something, though? I think YouTube now, I think with their algorithms and stuff, I think they just kind of like it's... you can't make stuff take off on YouTube anymore. What was your biggest video there? The History of the Jungle movie? I think it was probably like the last biggest one, was it? If I'm not mistaken.
My biggest video, the last biggest video, I think was my, let me think, because my biggest video by over 300,000 is my top 10 Ren and Stimpy episodes, which is shocking. But
how long ago was that recent? How long ago was that?
That was 4 years ago.
Yeah.
But the biggest video that was in recent years was my top 10 worst as told by Ginger's episodes list. And that was 2 years ago. I haven't been able to get a big video with 100,000 views since then.
Yeah, I think YouTube is just screwing around, I think. And, mind you say that Anchor's doing pretty well with those interviews.
Oh yeah. Like when I post my stuff on Anchor, I get like a few, I mean, sure. My listeners are a lot shorter than if I were to do it on YouTube, but I still get a bigger response on Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. I mean, here's the thing. I completely forgot about this and I'm an idiot for doing so. But a few days ago, I had been posting on Anchor for one full year. And I have been posting an episode almost every day, and I am almost clean with my catalog. And I have currently 10,000 listeners, 10,000 listens, and about 200 unique listeners. And I think that's great, considering that I've just been doing it a year ago.
Exactly. So I think, the audience has spoken, as far as I'm concerned. Like, I think a lot of them now are abandoning YouTube and just going right. You know, we're listening to us on the podcast.
Yeah. So speaking of which, so Nikita was a great person to have on the show. She talked to us about, you know, how she was able to get into the audition of The Lion King and all the other stuff that she's been doing afterwards. She was in a lot of other TV shows and movies, and she's a great acting coach. And she's been doing a lot of things that a lot of people don't really talk about, which is a shame because, she seems to be a really talented actress when she's in the right role. And, just mentioning earlier that, you know, she had just given birth to a baby girl. And I think that with 2020, I think that we need to hear some positive things about life coming into this world as opposed to life being taken away.
Exactly. So, congratulations. And I hope she's going to be a wonderful joy. So.
Yes, absolutely. And please, if you can, listen to that podcast interview. It's actually, one that I'm really proud of.
Give me the link to it and we'll post it up in the description of the show.
Okay, I will do that.
Cool. Okay. Moving on, the Saturday morning cartoons are coming back.
Yay!
So, in regards to Saturday, my memories of Saturday morning cartoons, it was more it was definitely Disney, and it was definitely like, your typical Saturday morning cartoons, no doubt about that. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and things like that. And that block's definitely been missed, and no doubt the big mainstream media corporations have obviously been listening in as well, and so it looks like we're going to be getting that back as a regular routine. So
probably for those who are wondering, what are we talking about? So Saturday morning cartoons were huge around the 1960s, where they would just show off a block of cartoons from around maybe 7 in the morning all the way until 12 o'clock noon, and they would be showing off a lot of these cartoons from CBS, NBC, ABC, and then eventually it would spread out to like Disney, Nickelodeon, Cartoon Network. And so as time went on, according to this one article around 2014, they said, well, because of streaming services and because of people watching stuff on YouTube as opposed to people watching stuff on TV, then we are going to shut everything down. No more Saturday morning cartoons. But then MeTV, which is a channel I think I have that television channel, but I haven't checked it out yet. But yes, so MeTV had announced that on January 2nd, they are going to be showing off Saturday morning cartoons as early as 7 a.m. going into noon. And that's really exciting for people. I mean, not only just like, oh, just regular cartoons. They're going to show off the classics. They're going to show Looney Tunes, Tom and Jerry, Popeye, and many more. And I remember that, you know, people have been yearning for Saturday morning cartoons, even to the point in which, like, I remember seeing a Facebook post about, like, classic Saturday morning cartoons that will be showing on reruns, like where they would be live streamed and people would be tuning into by the hundreds.
Yeah, I tell you what, if MeTV gets ratings out of this, I think this is gonna start a whole thing, I think, and I think we're gonna see all of this start to come back. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. And who knows? Maybe this will be the start of other blocks that we used to grow up as kids to come back. Maybe the Disney afternoon block, or maybe even the Fox. Well, I doubt that Fox is going to be coming back with the Fox Kids or anything like that. But
I highly doubt either. Yeah, like some of this stuff wasn't all that mainstreamy on it either. So like, it isn't surviving that Disney ended up buying like all their blocks.
So. Oh really? What about Batman the Animated Series? That wasn't mainstream for you?
Well, I mean, like, well, that was on WB Kids, wasn't it? Not Fox Kids.
I mean, it was originally airing on Fox Kids right before it moved over to WB.
Oh, right. Okay, then. Well, yeah.
But here's the thing. Like, a lot of people seem to forget that Fox Kids was, like, a major contender back then. I mean, sure, a lot of people may know it about, like, oh, you know, that's where they aired, like, you know, Digimon and that kind of stuff. But no, believe it or not, I mean, it aired, like, a lot of great programs over there. We had Bobby's World. We had, let's see, Men in Black, the Animated Series. We had... Let's see what else there was. Extreme Ghostbusters was another one. But I think there, you know, Batman did show up there briefly, but it was mostly a Kids WB property.
Yeah, but this is the thing. Like, I think some of the stuff you were talking about, I think I'm sure they've aired in other places besides Fox Kids.
That's true. So, you're right.
Yeah, so unfortunately, I guess, is the thing. Like, if you guys end up being kind of like an echo for, like, other programs, that's the problem. I mean, this is the thing I say about the... about the children's channel, like some of the stuff that they were airing, like, it was unique. It was it was stuff that wasn't basically on some of the other mainstream channels at the time, and so it was it had that advantage for a while. But obviously, some of the there was a reason why these other shows didn't appear on other TV stations, because they weren't always that good. So, yeah.
Sure. But yeah, I mean, I would love it if this were to spread out even more, because I know some people would be saying, why am I going to stay up early, go up early and so I can be able to watch these things when I can just have it access into my, you know, television to watch it on live stream, or I could do a streaming service or something like that. But you have to understand that a lot of people can't pay for streaming services, and they have to rely on television so that they can be able to watch what they want. And, you know, for a lot of them, you know, for kids especially, you know, Saturday morning cartoons was a big commodity. And I think the fact that MeTV is going to decide to bring it back with, like, the classics to start things off, it's like, I think it's a great idea. And I'm really looking forward to what they have in the future.
Exactly. The thing is that this, mind you, if this does catch on, like, that's a damning indictment for the streaming services, isn't it? Like, it's,
yeah,
like, oh yeah, hey, we got something. You got something here for, like, and you're going to pay like a certain month for it, but you know, your content isn't enough to kind of like keep eyeballs, you know, clean on the screen. So they're going to, you know, gravitate off to somewhere else. Or there's other people out there who just don't feel like, you know, it's not enough. You know, like they'll say that they're too restricted in their own particular content. So they'll end up, you know, turning on the TV, finding something on there for free. You know, like, they've got to watch a few ads just to go through it. And they'll be like, you know, hey, you know, like, there's something here for me, which isn't something I'm already paying, you know, a certain amount for. You know, like, why am I paying for this? You know, goodbye. You know, like, this could end up backfiring quite badly on the streaming services. If they feel like, you know, their, Saturday morning cartoons has got something to offer them that, so, you know, other streaming services don't. You know.
Play it smart, that is.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Anyway, let's see how this experiment plays out. It is going to be January 2nd on 2021. So, new year and a new era for Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Hilary Duff is not going to be playing Lizzie McGuire in the revival. That is now dead. So.
Yep, it is officially dead, and we can all blame Disney for that.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's... I mean, here's the thing about this. Like, they've got some. Here's the thing. I mean, I think it's one thing they can easily sweep under the carpet, unfortunately, because, I mean, look at the huge announcements that they had, you know, on last week's show. Like, you know, do you think if we'd gone through all of that, do you think we would even be talking about Lizzie McGuire? I think at that
nope.
point? No.
No.
So, unfortunately, it has gone by the wayside. And, I mean, who knows? Maybe it might be a situation where they're not thinking of doing it now, but maybe in the future they probably might reconsider it, maybe. So, like, the thing about this, like, you know, it's it seems to be garnering some interest before. I mean, like, has Hillary Duff done something to, like, rub Disney the wrong way? I don't know. I mean, like, it's,
It has nothing to do with that. In fact, Terry Minsky, who is the creator of Lizzie McGuire, wanted to go into a more adult direction with the show. She wanted to tackle in some real hard issues because she felt that shows such as Girl Meets World and Raven's Home were just too childish with their, you know, situations and with their drama. So she wanted to go into a more realistic direction. But Disney was like, no. And so Terry and Disney were having a major tussle, and then it ended up with it not happening. All because that Terry Minsky wanted to go into a more realistic direction with the character because she felt that the life of Lizzie would be going in this direction. But Disney were like, no, we want to keep it to what the fans want. We need to take it in this direction, just like all the other ones that we've been doing. So they disagreed, and so now the show is officially dead.
Yeah, which is a shame, really, because, I mean, I sort of agree with Terry McKinsky's idea that, you know, this is Hillary Duff is an adult now. I think we could all agree on that, can't we? Like, the fact that, you know, and she's going to be put in these situations. And so, I mean, what's Disney going to do? What, are they going to, like, just pretend that, you know, Lizzie McGuire hasn't aged since the show? And
they might do the same thing that they did with Raven's Home, in which, like, it's going to focus on her kids, and the kids are going through wacky shenanigans, and they're doing the same.
No. Like, I mean, other shows, I could probably see them doing that, but Lizzie McGuire, I can't see that happening. You know, like, it's like, you know, like, I pitched the idea to Craig, you know, about, you know, Hey Arnold, you know, being, you know, with them obviously being parents, and then obviously, you know, them, you know, taking their experiences from the show and then obviously passing on to their children. I mean, I think that would be a good concept, I think, to have. I think because obviously it'll give, like, us to kind of, like, something to kind of, like, relate to, and then it'll give, like, you know, their kids to something to relate to. So that's stuff like that I can agree with, but I mean, in regards to, like, thing, you can't do that with every single concept, though. That's the thing. Like,
exactly. Now, here's the thing. I mean, this is the thing that everybody has been doing. Every time that there is a sequel series to a popular show, they always do the same thing. It's either it's them as adults and going through everyday situations, or it's them having kids and the kids are going through the situation. So, yeah, I think that they wanted to do... I don't know what they wanted to do. I mean, they didn't even mention about what the synopsis was going to be about. They just mentioned that we're going to see Lizzie and all of her friends as adults. So, I mean, I think that Terry really wanted to go into a more realistic direction. Because for those who don't know what Lizzie McGuire is, Lizzie McGuire was a Disney Channel sitcom series that aired around the early 2000s. And it featured a girl named Lizzie McGuire, and she was going through her everyday situations. And she had... an imaginary, you know, kind of like alter ego where it would be animated talking about, like, this is how she personally feels. Think of it like Clarissa Explains It All, except for the Disney Channel and a little bit more comedic. So I think that Terry, because she wanted to go in a different direction with Lizzie, saying, you know, I want to take it into a more offset approach that what the show is accustomed to, with showing off the comedy and more realism. It's kind of like how Mitchell Kriegman, the creator of Clarissa Explains It All, did Things I Can't Explain, where it's Clarissa as an adult, and she goes through a lot of adult issues, unemployment and struggling with debt and struggling with, you know, finding a boyfriend and all that kind of stuff. Like, it is a very adult story focusing on a character that we've known of since we were kids. So I take it that Terry wanted to do the same thing, except on a series on Disney Plus, but then Disney was like, that's not what we do. And yeah, that pretty much just went nowhere.
Mm-hmm. So Lizzie McGuire, you know, pretty much in the shadows at this point. And so I don't know when it will ever reappear again. But if it does, we'll let you know. So
yeah, and it's a shame because, you know, Hillary Duff has been kind of struggling to get something, you know, relevant in these day and age, because I think that she did a movie about a year before the announcement called The Haunting of Sharon Tate, which is about the true story about a girl who was one of the many girls who was murdered during the Charles Manson incident. And I heard a lot of bad reviews on it.
Well, she also did, she also did that Food Fight movie as well, which, yeah. So,
yeah, she really needed to get something to come back. And, well, I'm afraid that we're just going to have to wait a little longer for Hillary Duff's comeback.
Yeah, but, I mean, why do I get the feeling that she's going to turn up as, like, you know, somebody's sidekick in, like, a 3D animation film?
Oh, God.
Yeah. Well,
here's the thing. At least she's not, at least she didn't go in the dumpster fire. Oh, I'm struggling with my relevancy and I'm going to do a whole bunch of stupid stuff like Lindsay Lohan did. At least she's settled in. She has a family. She's married. She has kids now. So at least she's, you know, stable. So I can give it that. But as for, you know, career-wise, I mean, I don't really hear too much about her. So, yeah, this would have been a great opportunity for new kids to get introduced to Lizzie McGuire, as well as the adults who grew up with it. So, yeah, I guess Disney doesn't like money, or if they do like money, they don't like money on the properties that they already created as opposed to the properties that they already bought. So it's like, oh, well.
Yeah. Well, let's move away from throwing away money to what is money, and that is basically being Carmen Sandiego, and we have next been hearing that it is going to be the fourth and final season that will be released for Carmen Sandiego. So the capers are coming to an end.
So. Yeah, that's true. And it's oh man, like, I understand that they wanted to end it when it's good, kind of like when we talked about DuckTales a few weeks ago. But yeah, I mean, the story of Carmen, at least in this incarnation, has been really, really good. Like, we get to focus on her for once, as opposed to focusing on the people who are trying to chase after her. And it gives you an interesting backstory about, like, we're trying to find out what her past is. Like, you know, she had this interesting backstory in which she was abandoned as a child and she was picked up by Vile. And then, as time goes on, she's trained to be the greatest criminal. And then she doesn't want to be the greatest criminal anymore and she wants to fight off against Vile. And then so she teams up with two people who are, you know, believe it or not, are just so happen to be in the original Carmen Sandiego animated series from the 90s who were originally supposed to chase after her. So, yeah, we have Zach and Ivy, who were the main protagonists in the original show, are now her sidekicks in this incarnation. And we have other characters who are brought in who are just absolutely great, like Shadow Son and Coach Blunt. And, you know, you have Tigress and you have, you know, various other great characters. Paper Dash is a great character. So, yeah, and, you know, Chase Devenaw is a really good, you know, goofy kind of chief. Julia is fantastic. She's a great character. I wish she would have been the main character as opposed to, you know, Chase. But, you know, that's neither here or there. But, yeah, there's a lot of great callbacks to not only the 94 animated series, but also to the game shows and even to the PC games. But it's able to give it an interesting coat of paint because I'm actually planning on doing a retrospective of this pretty soon. I actually tried to attempt to do it a few years ago, but I was just overwhelmed because I did three retrospectives in the same year. I did the Clarissa month, I did the three original Nicktoons month, and then I did Hey Arnold month, all at the same year. And then I tried to squeeze Carmen Sandiego in, which was a stupid decision I shouldn't have never done. But I was going to point out that one of the things that happened after the game shows and the animated series ended, and then when Broderbund was purchased by the Learning Company, is that Carmen Sandiego was like almost not relevant anymore. I mean, she had like one game for the GameCube and a few mobile games and something for the Facebook, but that was it. Only until the Netflix series came along that Carmen Sandiego became anywhere near relevant anymore. So I'm really glad that we were able to see this great series bring Carmen Sandiego back to life. As for whether they'll continue with it, I'm not sure. But at least we know that we got like one of the best incarnations of the character that we've ever seen.
Yeah, and so I mean, and also having to bring the character back, it's like, you know, it's got big shoes to fill. Like, you know, like, this isn't just going to be like, oh, you know, this was like a long-lost PC game that, you know, we're now going to turn into, like, you know, a Netflix series and things like that. Like, you know, that's happened now. Like, if they ever want to do anything with this in the future, it's got something to live up to now. You know, like, its reputation is definitely on par now. I've actually been looking at the whole series. You know, like, there's not a bad episode that people don't like about this show. which is like, which is astounding for a series when you really think about it, because you think there's like some weaker episodes that probably aren't all that great, but you know, the fact that it has such a stellar record at this rate, I mean, like, and also keep this in mind, we're saying this before we even know what season 4 is going to be about, so like, you know, they could do a Game of Thrones on us still. Like, you know, that's still a possibility that's on the table, but you know, in regards to this show, it's so beloved by its fans, and so beloved by critics, and so beloved by, you know, just the general watcher as well. Like, you know, these capers have been great capers at the end of the day. So, like, I think, you know, so whatever they decide to do with the series in the future, they're going to have to, you know, treat it with the utmost respect. Like, this isn't some property anymore that, you know, was just like, you know, a DOS game, like, you know, from yesteryear. This is something that you have to take seriously now, because there's a lot of people who are beloved with this.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even though the series was always beloved in the 90s, but now people who are younger now know about the series. So you really can't just let it die as soon as the series is over. It has, I mean, I don't want to be like, oh, you know, Scooby-Doo, in which like there's like many, many DVDs and incarnations of it every single year to the point in which it gets tired. But you need to definitely treat the property like with respect. Kind of like, I guess maybe Ninja Turtles would be a good one, because even though that it has its fair share of oddities, it has been pretty consistent with a lot of people liking either the 80s series, the 2000 series, the 2012 series, and I know some people who do like Rise. So I guess in kind of that aspect, I mean, if you want to go into a completely different direction with Carmen again, because this is the first time that she's ever been a main character. She has always been the villain, and she's always been a background villain at that. Yeah, kind of funny, because Carmen Sandiego's henchmen would be the one to get more of the focus, not her. So the fact that they focus on her for once, it's like, now we need to really step it up. It's like, okay, what do we do? Okay, let's make her a full-on villain as opposed to the protagonist who's trying to save, you know, these landmarks from being stolen by Vile. So let's have her be the leader of Vile this time and then going around stealing things, but she does it for a purpose. I mean, I think that would be an interesting idea if they want to go into more of that, but again, let's see how that turns out.
You know what? I think we should get this debate out of the way, because I think it's going to come up in the future. Do you know what that is?
What's that?
Live action series.
You know, they have been, here's another thing I was going to actually point out, because they have been trying to do a live action Carmen Sandiego movie since the 90s. First it started around when the game shows were just starting to end. And they wanted to have Sandra Bullock as Carmen Sandiego. And then that show, then when that was canceled. Then when Jennifer Lopez was really popular around the 2000s, they wanted to make her Carmen Sandiego. But then that project got dropped. So I think that eventually we will have a Carmen Sandiego movie. And if they bring back Gina Rodriguez, who is the voice of Carmen Sandiego, I think that she'd be great in it. Kind of like similar to how they were able to bring in a few voice actors who actually played as their respective characters in The Mandalorian. I think that'll be a fantastic idea.
Yeah. Well, you know, babe, like, we know how this industry works. Like, you know, they'll probably, like, say, well, you know, let's do it a 3D animation film. And, oh, hey, Illumination Studios, fancy seeing you here. Oh, God, I could just see it on the horizon.
Don't joke like that.
I'm not joking, babe. It just, every time we have good ideas on this show, it always seems to, like, to, you know, not happen. So, like, yeah, but anyway, let's quickly move on before, you know, I come with any more bad ideas. And like, oh, no, let's move on before, you know, we come with any good ideas and then figure out what they're actually going to do. You know, like, so let's try and get that. So we've been doing the Pix Minis for a good couple of episodes now. I think we're up to about 16, 17, something like that. At the moment.
We are up to episode, I believe it's 19 or 20.
Oh, 19 or 20, yeah, actually, because it is the 20th of December, so we will be on that. Actually, we should be on episode 20 now, actually, thinking about it.
Yes,
so
we are. Episode 20 will be up tonight as of the recording of this podcast.
Yeah. So, we're asking everybody, we want to know what your thoughts are on the Pixar shorts we've been talking about so far. So, you can get your ratings in now. We'll leave a link in the description and also in the underneath this podcast. podcast as well. So yeah, if you want to rate them all, so we're going to be talking about you know, George and AJ, Dog Special Mission, you know, Andre and Wally B, all those good ones that are out there. So if you want to have your say on what you think are the top five best and the top five worst Pixar shorts are going to be, let us know in the form that we're going to put in for you as well. And then the deadline is going to be Christmas Day, so we'll end up on the day that we basically do the Soul review. And then after that, on New Year's Eve, we'll then we'll tell you basically who's the best and who's the worst out of the top 26.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and I'm really looking forward to that, and we'll definitely see on what you guys think are the best, and we'll see which ones are the worst. I can know which ones are the worst cars.
So, but I mean, also on top of that, as well, people are asking, wait, 26? Why do you say? Because you said there was only going to be 25. Well, I decided to split up Jack, Jack Attack, and Mr. Incredible and Pals. I was thinking of putting them like all into the same, you know, the same selection, but I decided that now let's put them all in the same thing, so people mm-hmm. can basically. And so far, we've only got two responses at the moment. So you know, come on, guys, you know, get your responses in real quick. Because
you know how it is, Aaron. Every single time that we do one of these polls, there's always a person who likes to post things at the last minute.
Yeah, so anyway, so we'll wait upon those things, and yeah, we'll definitely wait for your responses. So mm-hmm. cool. And also, so we're going to give you a preview on the aftermath of Hey Arnold the Jungle Movie. We're going to be posting the third video on Hey Arnold the Jungle Movie, giving you our thoughts on that. So basically, Patricia, do you want to give us a preview on basically what we're going to be expecting in that episode?
Oh, wow. I mean, given the fact that I've been working on this script for about a year, we are going to be talking about a lot of things. We're going to be talking about everything from the ratings, which has been a massive debate for fans for the longest time about whether it was a success or a failure. Then we're going to be talking about the international air dates, which you have to remember that, you know, a lot, it didn't air just one day after the premiere in America. No, it took months for it to be aired in other countries. And you know, in sad cases such as, you know, Peru and Paraguay and Uruguay, they weren't able to air until like 6 months after the Jungle Movie aired in America. Then the next things that we're going to be talking about is the fight to get a season 6, which a lot of people have been doing a lot of things such as social media shout outs, hashtags, videos, and then the petitions, just like how they were able to get the Jungle Movie coming in. Then we're going to be talking about like, oh, well, if it's not going to air on Nickelodeon, let's see if it can air on Netflix. And so we're going to talk about the many reasons on why Netflix didn't work out, and then maybe it would work out and then it wouldn't work out because of the CBS Viacom merger and the different direction that Nickelodeon went to when it came to management. And then finally, I'll conclude it off with, you know, the Jungle Movie, you know, in terms of, you know, how it did overall. And then finally, if Hey Arnold does have a leg to stand on in producing, you know, the content that people would care about, especially since I personally think in terms of Nickelodeon, 90s nostalgia is slowly phasing out in favor of 2000 nostalgia, because we talked about this last week alongside with Crystal from the Hillwood Dailies, that the iCarly reboot is going to be coming out on Paramount Plus, and Nick Rewind has been showcasing a lot of 2000 sitcom shows such as Zoe 101, Drake and Josh, Nasty Classified, iCarly, and Victorious on their YouTube channel, and a lot less on Rugrats, Doug, Ren and Stimpy, Hey Arnold, and all those things. So I'm going to be talking about, does Hey Arnold have a chance, especially since now we're moving over to 2000s nostalgia. So yeah, expect that and many more in the aftermath of the Jungle Movie.
Yep, and you'll be expecting some of me for myself as well, because I also have some, my own two cents to put into this too. So yeah, but definitely be checking out the Hey Arnold aftermath episode, because it is going to be the one that rounds off our basically our final thoughts, I think, on Hey Arnold the Jungle Movie. But no doubt somewhere down the line, also in the Hey Arnold anniversary shows, I'll be continuing talking about it. So
yeah, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're up to our post review on The Witches, and so we had the discussion, and my goodness, we had a lot to say on it, and I still feel at this point that I just feel like the movie just doesn't, you know, do the book real justice, I don't think. And I just feel like, you know, the only thing I really take away from it once again is the final scene of the movie, which I think, you know, was I really wish it was kind of clamped onto the end of the 90s movie, because then I think it would have been a complete picture. But no. It looks like basically we had to wait for several decades, I think, for the what could be the great ending of The Witches to finally come to fruition. And unfortunately, it comes into a very mediocre and pretty I don't want to say meaningless, because I mean, like, obviously it has some like recognition of like various other things, but it does feel quite messy now when you really look at it all and think of it, how it's all put together.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's such a disappointment, because that's the reason why we did the retrospective in the first place, was for the lead up of this movie. And the fact that it did not meet any of our expectations, with it being incredibly mismanaged and the cast being not as good as the one in the original Witches, and the story taking a lot of risks, which doesn't even pay off because they don't follow up with it. It just feels like a massive letdown. And I think that with, you know, comparing, Angelica Houston's portrayal as the Grand High Witch and then Anne Hathaway's, it's like night and day. I mean, sure, Angelica Houston is over the top, but at least she's frightening. Anne Hathaway is just ham on top of ham, just overacting too much, and you can't really take her seriously.
And you also get the feeling that, just the way that she's presented and the way that she's being directed, it just feels like, you got to have fun in some of the things you do, but then also you got to take it seriously too. And you just get the feeling that there's not really too much seriousness that they've been taken into the presentation that we've got here. Do you get the feeling of that at all?
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, if you read the original source material, it is a very dark book. Like, we're talking about a boy who lost his parents, raised by his grandmother. We're talking about a covet of witches. We're talking about the witches wanting to turn all the kids around the world into mice. And it's just, and the fact that they were able to not take it seriously, like just make it a full-on comedy, and then they added some additional things into it. And I'm not talking about like the addition of like, oh, they're just going to make the characters African-American and it takes place in America in the 1960s. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about that, okay, we have to add an additional character, Mary or Daisy or whatever you want to call her. And she does absolutely nothing. She's just an additional character because Bruno is just all kinds of useless, like always. And that's really a disappointment. It's like, I get it. You want to stick to the book, but there's a lot of things in the book that are very dated. And Roald Dahl's depiction of fat people is very, very outdated. And Bruno, out of all the characters that we've seen who are trying to be Augustus Gloop clones, such as Bruce Bogtrotter or any of those other characters, he is the most useless out of the entire lot. And I would wish that maybe they would update him, make him a little bit more useful, not always thinking about food or all the time. But no, we have to keep to the same stereotypes that was in the original book because, you know, once again, just like every other adaptation of a Roald Dahl book, we have to run it by the Dahl family so that it's up to their standards. I don't know, just everything about this movie was just a massive disappointment. The fact that we had such great people in this, like Guillermo del Toro, Alfonso Cuarón, Robert Zemeckis, and I know that we talked about Robert Zemeckis being a washed-up has-been and not doing anything good since, what, The Polar Express? That was almost 20 years ago. And, you know, he's still doing the whole, you know, special effects can be able to substitute a good story and good characters, which it definitely shows.
Nope. But, yeah, it definitely doesn't. So.
You know what? I mean, and we're not going to get another adaptation anytime soon because, as you know, we talked about the fact that the family had apologized for the anti-Semitic statements that he said.
Yeah, and which, I mean, like, I think that's just going to put Roald Dahl by the wayside, I think, for the foreseeable future until, you know, all that's kind of, like, gone away, I think, at this point. So, I mean, it's a shame, really, that this is going to be, you know, the Roald Dahl movie we're going to be ending on for a while, I think. And I really hope that, we come back with like one of Roald Dahl's other stories and get a more, you know, hopefully more well-tuned movie than that we've had recently. So, yeah.
Yeah, and here's the thing. It's like, we haven't posted this yet, but we had recorded the top five best and worst of the Roald Dahl adaptations. And when it comes to theatrical movies, it's the worst.
Mm-hmm.
It is the worst theatrical Roald Dahl movie that we've seen. And it is such a shame that it came out the latest in the timeline. I mean, all the other ones have been like 80 to 90%, with the exception of the 2016 adaptation of the BFG, which is 76%. But all of them have been in the 80s and 90s. And the fact that this was able to break it is such a shame. And we're not going to get any theatrical ones anytime soon. I mean, the only ones that I do know of is that we're going to get the Netflix series with Taika Waititi. But now he's going to be doing Star Wars. So we don't know if he's going to be able to focus on that or focus on this. And then there's also the Matilda musical, but we haven't heard anything about it ever since we heard that Ralph Fiennes was going to be Trunchbull. So we don't know where that's going. But other than that, nothing. Like, I doubt that anybody's going to be touching this for a while.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, if you want to know the real thoughts on The Witches, we go in for like an hour. I mean, how long do we go on that episode for? Like an hour and like 9 minutes, I think it was.
Yeah, it's about.
So, yeah, so definitely check out that episode. And it's, you know, I think that will basically sum up all our thoughts on The Witches. And, yeah, and whether Anne Hathaway will get a main role anytime in the near future after this, I have no idea.
But, I don't know either. But, yeah, we'll see.
Okay. And finally, we're not going to leave on a goofy bit of news, but so we're going to be leaving on a bit of news, which I thought was quite astonishing, really. Patricia, you finally found some time to actually play that SNES classic I got you for Christmas.
So, yes, last Christmas, I did. Actually. Yeah, so, yeah, Aaron had given me an SNES classic for Christmas about last year. And I did dabble into it, but, you know, due to the fact that I was really busy with school and other things, I haven't had the chance to sit down and really play it. So far, I had actually completed Super Metroid, Super Mario World, and Street Fighter 2. And then just recently, before I did the Earthbound, I just finished Super Punch-Out. And that took me 3 months to do, considering that Rick and Nick Bruiser just made me lose every single time. So now I decided I wanted to check out Earthbound because I am not the biggest fan of JRPGs. I mean, the fact that you just sit around and just push a button to fight something, it doesn't really engage me. I don't know. For some reason, only Pokemon has really, like, engaged me in some way. I tried playing Final Fantasy VI, but then you have to wait until the meter charges all the way up. And then you attack, and I lose every single time. I still need to find a way to play that really well. And Super Mario RPG, I briefly dabbled into it. I haven't fully, like, played into it, but I will as soon as I'm done with Earthbound. So what made me decide to check out Earthbound? Well, I've been knowing about it for quite a while. I mean, I've known about it ever since, you know, Super Smash Brothers for the Nintendo 64 and Melee, where there's this character named Ness. And I was like, who is this character? And then he's like, oh, this is character name from Earthbound. And I'm like, what's Earthbound? And so I've been hearing about it that it was like this Super Nintendo RPG that focuses on a kid named Ness, and he has to fight off some alien being named Gygus. And I knew, like, maybe one person who loved the series. The Mother series, when, you know, it was, like, you know, hugely popular on the internet, and then around, like, 2007 when Mother 3 came out in Japan, and America was not going to get it, and then there was this huge movement to localize it or something. And then after a while, people such as the Happy Video Game Nerd, a.k.a. Derek Alexander, started talking about it. And then Game Trailers did some discussions about it right before they moved over to Easy Allies. So I have heard about it for quite a while. And then it started getting more popular when Undertale came out. And then they were like, this is the game that influenced Undertale. And I've been hearing a lot of people saying how Undertale is like this amazing masterpiece and all that kind of stuff. And I've seen like videos of it and it looked really cool. I mean, I decided to give Earthbound a shot. And I'm up to the point in which you get to pick up the third character, Jeff. And he's out of the boarding school and he's going over to save Ness and Paula, who have been trapped in the little town that they're at, where it's being affected by zombies. And I've been enjoying it. I mean, I really like the writing of this, the game. I really enjoy the soundtrack. And yeah, it's still a bunch of like sitting around and pushing one button so that you can be able to like can progress. But it definitely made me feel how I felt about playing Pokemon for the first time. Like, you know, you get to ride a bike you get to, you know, fight off like weak creatures, and then you get to fight stronger creatures later on, and then you get to have like the one hit KOs. You have to have, you know, a backpack where you get to carry all your things. You get an ATM. You get to go to the Escargot Express so you can be able to drop off things that you don't want to get the things that you do need. And you get to have resting areas. So I found out why, because the same company who helped develop Pokemon, Ape, also worked on Earthbound. So I thought that the game is actually really enjoyable. And it gets pretty dark, especially when I went over to the Happy Happy Village. And it's like you have this, you know, village that's been taken over by a cult. And that was pretty terrifying. But other than that, yeah, it's such a fun, happy game that's very, you know, lighthearted. And you have a lot of great dialogue from the NPCs, and the music's great. So, yeah, I've been enjoying myself.
Yeah, I mean, like, it gets super weird once you start getting to the final boss. It really does.
I'm sure it does.
Yeah, so I won't spoil you on it, by the way. But if you ever watch the Angry Video Game episode of Earthbound, or Mother, if you will, then I think definitely. If you're for being spoiled, then definitely check that out. But
okay, well, I'll definitely check it out when I have finished playing Earthbound. I mean, the good thing about the other videos that I did see on Earthbound was that they weren't spoiler heavy. They just briefly talked about the game, and then people such as the Happy Video Game Nerd, Derek Alexander, I meant. He's known to stop skeletons from fighting now. He actually discussed about why he thinks it's the most underrated RPG ever made, and he's discussed about why it didn't catch on in the U.S. So it's actually funny, because that kind of was my sort of influence of how I started getting to write the Jungle Movie video, where he talked about, like, okay, you have this video game that didn't do well in the U.S., and then this is the fight of all the fans trying to see if they can be able to bring it back to America with Nintendo, and it took a long while until Earthbound Beginnings, and then Mother came out on, you know, things like the Wii U and the eShop, and then finally we got Earthbound on the eShop and on the SNES Classic. So, yeah, it took a long time for Mother fans to get the games that they wanted accessible, as opposed to spending hundreds of dollars on eBay. It's kind of like similar here. It's like I knew about the history of the Jungle Movie, and I decided to talk about, okay, how can such a great series from the 90s get so mismanaged with a mediocre movie? And then it was just pretty much forgotten by Nickelodeon. And then finally, the fans were like, no, we want to finish off the series. Let's do this petition, and let's do all these fan letters to Nickelodeon regarding about the Jungle Movie. And so I guess I kind of have to thank Derek for that video, and that video that he was covering was Earthbound. So I kind of have Earthbound in a way to kind of thank for one of my most successful videos.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you want to check out Earthbound, then get yourself an SNES Classic, or, you know, I think I'm trying to think whereabouts Earthbound actually is on the is it the Virtual Console? I'm trying to think.
Well, here's the thing. I know it's available on the eShop, so you can be able to download it there if you have a Nintendo 3DS or a Wii U, if you still have one of those. I don't know if it's on the Switch yet, but I do know that you can be able to access that or from the SNES Classic. And then there's, you know, buying a cartridge on eBay for a few hundred dollars, which I don't recommend. So,
yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, but definitely check it out. I mean, platforms right now, it's obviously on the SNES, but obviously. It's on the Wii U, it's on the Nintendo 3DS, and it's also on the SNES Classic Edition. So,
okay, cool. Yep, there you go.
Right, okay, then that'll do it, everybody. So, thank you very much for checking out this episode of Aaron and Patricia. And the last ever episode of the year is basically going to be next week, next year. So maybe we'll probably do a end of year episode, maybe, and just go back on some of the stuff that's happened in 2020. And that's basically what you take it from there.
So, all right, then.
Cool. All right, then. Well, until next week, take care, everybody, and we'll see you soon.
All right, see ya.